You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron. There when it matters.
Paul Pagnotto is the CEO, founder at Pagnotto Corp. It's an independent multifamily office and wealth management firm based in Reston, Virginia. And he's in my pop-up studio here at the SU Exponential Finance Summit. And Paul, your story really touched a nerve. And we'll come to the moment that you almost became overwhelmed recalling your time during the global financial crisis a little bit later. But firstly, welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit more about your childhood and your journey into the world of financial and wealth management.
Oh, you bet. So growing up, I loved the sciences. I wanted to be the next Jacques Cousteau. I loved the scuba dive. And when I was just 7 years old, I had asked for a microscope for my birthday and always wanted to just view things through a different lens, and that lens being transparency, being able to see things differently, deeper. And that carried through my entire life. Now, in the financial industry, I bring a different lens. So that lens of transparency has always been a focus and paramount of mine. So leading up to the Great Depression, I went back to my childhood science background days to really drill down and understand fundamentally what was going on, what happened.
How do you apply that lens of transparency to the way you analyze companies in the broader financial and wealth management framework that you apply?
Yeah, so, you know, most companies have an essential founder leader, and I start there. So I start with that individual, and does that individual foster a culture, an environment of transparency? So a company is simply a mass of individuals. It's people. And that culture gets formed by the leader, the CEO, the founder. So I typically start with that individual. And then I really want to see and understand the mission and the purpose of the business. If you study the companies that are flourishing today, they're not just about profits. At a minimum, it has to be a combination of profits and purpose, and that needs to be balanced. Those are the companies that are recruiting the top talent. That's where people want to go to work. That's where people are most fulfilled. And those are the companies that are flourishing today. And clearly, transparency is woven into the purpose piece.
Some of the examples you referenced, Whole Foods, in the mutual fund space, there was a big disruption. Jack Vogel, who passed away last year, Vanguard, and we love Jack Vogel on the Classic Business Show because we're a big fan of exchange-traded funds and the transparency and the low cost that they've brought into the industry. Great examples of companies living that transparency sort of purpose. In terms of your framework, you've developed the six T's of transparency. Can you just take me through those quickly?
Sure, you bet. In just one moment with Jack. Jack Vogel was one of the greatest philanthropists. Vanguard, he actually turned into a nonprofit. So Vanguard is a nonprofit. So when he passed, his net worth was $80 million. So think about it. He created a company that has $5 trillion in assets, and he was only worth, not that it's trivial, 80 million versus worth, you know, a half a trillion. So just an incredibly purpose-driven individual. It took him 2 years to get approval by the SEC for the first ETF. Like, isn't that insane? Here he's creating something with complete transparency, bringing the costs all the way down, and the regulators still, it took him two years to gain approval. So he was an amazing human being, and we're fortunate for his legacy. So the six T's was a lot of deep thought for me analyzing the financial crisis, and deep thought for me to figure out a financial company to fix it. I never ever wanted to put my clients through that again, never wanted to put my team through that again, and I certainly did not want to go through that again.
Can I stop you there? What did you go through? So it's 2008. you're in charge of a firm that has just over $1 billion worth of assets under management. That's pension fund money, that's entrepreneurs, that's education funds for future generations. Huge responsibility. Then the wave breaks. What did you go through during that period?
So I had been up until that point, I had been in the industry close to 20 years, so 17, 18 years, and never experienced anything like it. So the foundation, the education that I had received up to that point, I wasn't aware of the structural flaws. I was not aware of the conflicts of interest. And frankly, a lot of my peers that are still at my prior firm, they're just not aware. Because you don't know what you don't know until you get exposed to it. So being in management and also having a business, a team, working with clients, I was exposed to those conflicts. And once I got exposed to those conflicts, I could never go back. I couldn't sleep at night and put my head on the pillow. So it's important for people to become educated on what the conflicts are, and for them to have deep thought with whatever business, whatever industry it is that we're working in. And then it's fixing it, you know, it's discovering. So it's discovery and learning and understanding what the conflicts are. What are the issues troubling a company, a person, a system? And then coming up with standards, coming up with principles to abide by that fix the problem, that fix the issue. So anything can be fixed. Anything. I've never seen a problem that can't be solved.
As long as the will is there to do it. And that's where the six T's really come in, to give one a framework.
Yes. So the first T is transparency standards. So come up with a set of standards that directly focus in on the issue or the issues at hand. And those standards can range from 3 to 10 in our instance. With the magnitude of the financial issues, there's 10. There's 10 transparency standards that we created. The second is terms. Need to have ridiculously simple terms, right? So if you receive a contract, if you're buying a property and the contract, you need an attorney to review it, that should be a red flag. So in today's society, people are getting tired of that. And the companies that are flourishing are ones that have very simple terms. And they're really focused on the client. They're not focused on themselves. They're putting the client first. So with us, with our client engagement agreement, the client pays one fee. It's for everything. All the conflicts are stripped out. It's on one page. It's very simple for them to understand. So terms are absolutely critical. Then you need to have accountability. So in the financial world, it's the advisor needs to be held accountable. The firm needs to be held accountable. In other industries, it's the team member, or the employer, et cetera, et cetera. So in our case, we actually file with the regulators the standards that we need to abide by, that we created on our own. So we are sticking our neck out and we're saying, hey, these are the 10 standards that we're communicating and we're legally binding ourselves to our clients. So we're held accountable, and every employee has to sign an attestation every single year that they follow and abide all 10 of those.
On that point, I'm reading a very interesting book at the moment by Paddy Upson, who spent a lot of time with the national cricket team in South Africa as a mental coach, helping them with the mental aspects of the game. And he talks about the difference between an instructor as a coach who would come in and tell the players what to do versus the real meaning of a coach as someone who's going to help the team devise the rules of engagement and the framework. So if someone's late for a meeting, the team decides what the fines are going to be, who's going to forfeit what. And the difference that you get when you have the old top-down instructor approach versus getting the entire team to set the rules of engagement are profound. You have much more buy-in, and people actually live that accountability.
It's huge. That's being autonomous. So having an autonomous run team or autonomous run organization. So the exponential growing companies are autonomously run. The decisions are not top down. They're bottom up.
very critical that. Now, your last three, I think, are very important as well. Transparent cost in the local industry. It's been a big issue for years now. Fees that have been hidden, massaged, managed in a particular way. So investors are very alive to cost in particular.
The industry globally has a long way to go here. There's been a lot of progress made with the robo-advisors, the digital solutions, so a lot of progress. But even the robos aren't stripping all the conflicts out, and it's not completely transparent to the end user. So if you go to the average robo's site, they're going to quote a fee. Well, that's their advisor fee. That's not the total all-in cost. So there's still costs of the ETFs or the mutual funds they're investing in. In addition to that, most of the robos are the custodian. Whenever you have the advisor also be the custodian, there's conflicts. Because the custodian is an incentive to keep assets in cash, right? So in the States, the average cash account is paying like 20 basis points. Our clients receive 2.5% on their cash, their liquid cash. That's because we're not a custodian. We're sourcing the very best cash solution for them, and we're stripping out the cost. So a lot of work still needs to be done.
Very important point there, because robo-advisors have been held up as an automated AI-driven way to strip out a lot of those innate human conflicts and biases, but they do still exist. Truth and trust I almost put together as these two T's that are very, very important. In the South African context, we're a society that has grown distrustful over the last decade or so. Very poor political governance. There have been corporate scandals. The Steinhoff story, one of the biggest accounting frauds, second to Enron in the world. So there is a lot of distrust in the system at the moment. How do we rebuild that trust?
You got to go back to square one. So sometimes you have to take a step back to go 2 to 3 steps forward. So you own up to the problem, you take a step back, you create transparency standards, you have really, really good governance in place, and then you build. And it doesn't happen overnight. You have to do what you say you're going to do. You have to add value. You have to have results, you know, creating value to people. And then over time, the trust can be restored.
Now, an interesting element to all of this is the balance here. And I'd like your view on how we balance the trade-offs between a push and a demand from society for increased transparency because of technology, and that is where we're heading, versus the desire for people to own their private space. And they feel like Facebook knows a little bit too much about them, and LinkedIn knows a little bit too much about you, and I've got a free profile on LinkedIn, but they want to charge me to see who else is doing it. I mean, there is sort of this inherent tension. How do we manage that?
So the people vote every day with their pocketbook. So they vote with where they're buying. They vote with which social media outlet they're using. So at the end of the day, if the people, the masses, are not comfortable, they don't feel that they're receiving transparency, they're not going to go there. If Facebook doesn't do an about face, and it looks like they are, we'll see. If Facebook doesn't do an about face, someone else is going to come along and create a transparent networking solution like they have. So they've added huge value, but they have a challenge right now, and the people are not going to put up with it.
I've got to ask you, and we're talking transparency, what are you overweight at the moment in terms of your portfolio?
Yeah, so one, it's like magical being here in South Africa. This is my first time ever. I'll be back for sure.
And this is almost the middle of winter. Not bad.
Not bad at all. So our biggest overweight is emerging markets. So we have hit a point compared to the United States and the mature markets of a very big value creation. They're trading at such a discount, almost a 50% discount to the mature markets. And if you look at the growth projections, they're projected to grow 3 times the rate of like the United States over the next 5 years. So think about it. They're 50% discount, growing 3 times the rate over the next 5 years. It's hard for us not to get caught up in the moment and the present time. If you're patient, you look out 3 to 5 years, people are going to be immensely rewarded.
And Benjamin Graham would be proud of that. There's a lot of margin in safety in emerging markets. We hope that South Africa is one of those in the broader basket of emerging markets that is also going to see some outsized returns over the next few years. We have a new administration, as we saw from the cabinet announcement last night, dedicated to cleaning up and rooting out corruption and setting the country back on a sustainable growth path. So, Paul, it's a great pleasure chatting to you, and I trust you'll enjoy some more that the Cape has to offer. I don't know when you're going back, but if you've got a bit of time, I definitely recommend getting out into the winelands. It's a treasure.
Well, thank you. It's an honor being here.
That was Paul Pagnotto, CEO and founder of Pagnotto Corp, which is an independent multifamily office and wealth management firm. He's based in Virginia, and he's here to share his story about how he used the financial crisis to really pivot into a new values-based model of financial advisory services here on Classic.